Welcome, everyone. You are listening to Forged in Fire, where we explore how LGBTQ+ leaders develop their leadership superpowers. You'll hear from guests as they share how they navigated their journey through adverse and crucible experiences to develop into amazing leaders. Forged in Fire is hosted by Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram and Dr. Liz Cavallaro.
Hi, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Bree Fram. I'm an astronautical engineer in the United States Space Force and one of the senior transgender officers in the military. I'm a passionate advocate for the value inclusion brings to organizations.
And I'm Dr. Liz Cavallaro. I'm an adult development scholar and associate professor at the U.S. Naval War College. I'm also an experienced researcher, interviewer, leader development practitioner, and professional executive coach. Please join us as we discover the inspiring stories of how LGBTQ+ leaders are forged.
Welcome to another episode of Forged in Fire. Today, we have three amazing guests with us. Sabrina Bruce has served in the military for 9 years. She is an information system security manager overseeing cybersecurity in the Space Force. Sabrina is stationed at the National Reconnaissance Office and was recently selected for promotion to Master Sergeant, 4 years ahead of the average, signifying her as a top performer. Also joining us is Sergeant Zane Alvarez. Zane has 10 years of service in the United States Army as a behavioral health technician. He is currently the non-commissioned officer in charge of inpatient behavioral health services at his location. Alexandria Holder is a wife, parent, and active duty technical sergeant in the United States Air Force. Throughout her time in the Air Force, she's led in many different positions, from mission manager for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance sorties to being the acting first sergeant for over 750 airmen. She is currently building the Global Language Mentor Program at the Defense Language Institute and leading the DEIA Council for the 517th Training Group. All of our guests today just happen to be transgender. They've served through a roller coaster of policy changes and still face an uncertain future in the military. Their resilience and leadership throughout this tumultuous time is a fascinating and powerful look at LGBTQ leadership development under fire. Sabrina, Zane, and Alexandria, thanks so much for joining us today. We want to start by recognizing that all of you have had two very distinct periods in your service. Because of the length of time you served prior to transgender people being allowed to serve openly and authentically, and have gone through that roller coaster of policy changes over the past 7 years. We'd like to first dive into, what was it like serving in silence? What was your biggest challenge, or maybe your biggest surprise, from having to serve in the closet? And Zane, I'd like to start with you on that one, in terms of describing your time prior to being yourself.
So, like the majority of service members that come into the United States military, I joined at 18 years old. And at the time growing up, I grew up in a very conservative area of Florida and was very deep in the closet then before joining the military. And I had very much a journey between, you know, turning 18, 19, 20 years old, trying to figure out who it is that I am and what I wanted to be. And I was essentially outed when I first started my transition at my first duty station. And ironically enough, despite being surrounded by nothing but medical professionals, especially working in behavioral health, it was the least amount of support that I received out of any unit that I worked with. And it was really difficult at the beginning of my transition, when I started and in turn serving in silence and having to just be forced to follow these very specific rules and guidelines, of course, still serving honorably. But at the end of the day, I couldn't live as authentically as I wanted to in the beginning.
Sabrina, I know you have a story about the effect on you in relation to pens. Can you share that story with us and what it was like having to serve hiding a piece of yourself?
Yeah, that's funny. It's always what comes to mind immediately, because the mental gymnastics that I would jump through to prove my masculinity went all the way down to what pen color I used. If somebody handed me a purple pen or a pink pen or whatever, I would quickly hide it and make sure I was only using blue or black ink. I didn't want anything to be perceived as overly feminine about me, because I was sure if anybody noticed something like that, that they would recognize that I was dealing with this internal struggle of accepting that I was transgender.
Alexandria, how about you? What impact did the closet have on your career?
So I didn't have any pens, but whenever I enlisted back in 2004, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was also still in place. So I was joining this environment where I knew who I was not going to be accepted. So I pursued masculinity as much as I possibly could. In technical school, I was at DLI, the Defense Language Institute, for a year and a half. So I went to the gym regularly. I worked out. I grew a mustache. And let me tell you, I cannot grow facial hair to save my life. It was awful. So I had that mustache probably for 2+ years. And I struggled. It was very difficult keeping that important part of myself hidden. And I went through my first enlistment for 4 years, and I was like, well, the military is okay. I'm trying to do this masculine, manly thing. I guess I'll stick around for a little bit. And it got to the point where Don't Ask, Don't Tell got repealed. And I was like, wait a second. So we're recognizing equal marriage now. Maybe some point down the road, we're going to start looking at transgender service. Maybe I should make this a career. Like, I know I'm suffering in silence. This is difficult. I have difficulty building rapport with people, being vulnerable, being the best leader that I can. But perhaps there's hope on the horizon. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to stick around for a little bit. And I'm very glad that I did.
Before we move on to talking about the period of time where you had the ability to serve authentically, I'm wondering if you could each share a little bit about the way in which that period of serving in silence impacted your leadership and your development as leaders early on. Zane, let's go back to you.
So I come from a very strong military family. I'm third generation Army. And something that my father, now retired Sergeant Major Alvarez, taught me very early in my career is there are two main things that you can take from leaders. And that's what you want to be. And what I find to be more important is what you don't want to be. And what I took away from those leaders that I had at my first duty station was, I don't want to be that non-commissioned officer that can't build rapport with my soldiers. I don't want my soldiers not to be able to come to me without feeling at the very least comfortable. And that's always what I look back to when I started developing my leadership style and moving up in the ranks, was continuing to be that open and servant leader, as I'm currently in my advanced leader course right now. That's the big thing that we've been learning here, is servant leadership, and that I have been developing those skills even already because of experiencing that negative leadership.
Thanks for sharing that, Sabrina.
For me, before I transitioned, hiding that part of myself and pushing it so far down caused that dishonesty, that discongruence to come out in a lot of other aspects of my life. I found it much simpler to lie about problems than to face them straightforward, because I was hiding that part of myself. And so when I was a young airman, I had a problem with not taking credit and lying about things and not just accepting things as they are. Once I transitioned, that became much easier to handle, because I had faced those things and I was able to be honest and straightforward. And that's something I carry forward today. I didn't want to be somebody who lied my way through life, because that's not anybody that I respect.
Absolutely. Alexandria.
So for me, I found out that I was transgender from a very early age. I was about 7 years old. And back then in the late 1980s, there was no representation, there was no education. So I had no idea who I was. And I struggled with that quite a bit. And the way that I dealt with it was becoming robotic. I hid my emotions. I put up a wall between myself and everybody else. And whenever I joined the military, that wall was still in place. And as a young airman sitting there with a set of headphones in front of a computer, that's okay. But once you become a non-commissioned officer and you're in charge of people, that wall existing between yourself and your subordinates, that severely negatively impacts you as a leader. And I knew that I had to start breaking that wall down. And brick by brick, I started to take that wall and set it aside. But I couldn't do that to my fullest ability until I was able to come out. And it has definitely been a struggle. I've had a lot of things that, you know, I've had to deal with, from, you know, dealing with my push for masculinity, trying to deny who I am as a trans person, and then all other sorts of trauma that I've gone through in my life. Those are all bricks in that wall. But being able to serve openly and honestly with integrity, that has done the best in as far as establishing my way as a leader. I've grown so much since open service has been allowed. And I am definitely a much better leader than I was 7 years ago whenever I started this journey.
So let's build and extend upon that a little bit. You mentioned the walls coming down. Sabrina, you mentioned not having to lie about both yourself and other things, as it turned out. So let's go to your coming out experiences. Not only would I like to know what that experience was like for you in this military environment, but how did that then change the way you led and connected with others? Sabrina, let's start with you on this one.
So like Alexandra was saying about becoming an NCO, my transition to being an NCO coincided with my transition in general. I made Staff Sergeant the same year that I started hormones. And so those two things really drove me as I moved forward and becoming a leader. And with my transition, it was funny because I'm trying to like hide this stuff because I want to focus on work and I want to be a good NCO, but I also need to understand how this is going to impact me moving forward. It was funny in my workplace, like I'm doing my normal job. And so I hadn't transitioned at work yet, but after work, I was going out presenting female and my NCOIC came up to me and he's like, Airman Bruce, you have a little mascara on your eyes. Like, not sure where that's from. And I was like, whoops. And I took him to the side and I was like, hey, sir, I'm going through all of this. And he immediately was so supportive. He was like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Like, I'm sorry that I called you out like that. I hope that doesn't impact our relationship. And it meant a lot to me because I hadn't told many people yet. I had told my friends, but he was the first person that I worked with that wasn't like a friend and somebody in a position of authority that I told. And he was so supportive and he was there along the way, every part of my journey. And he still supports me to this day. I always know that if I have at least one person in my corner and that he's there and he reaches out to me occasionally and he encourages me, he keeps telling me that I'm going to be the first transgender chief in the military. And I'm like, I don't know about that, but we'll see if we get there.
Zane, you mentioned you were outed. You didn't get the choice to come out on your own. Did that evolve over time where later you had more of the agency to make your own decisions about being out? And what was that like for you?
A major difference that I see, at least with trans men versus trans women, is I just speaking from my journey and my perspective, I wasn't able to really hide my transition in any way, shape, or form. I started showing my my transition a lot faster than most other people. And so I either had to out myself, not by choice, over and over again, or was outed outside of my own choice. And it wasn't until this current duty assignment that I'm in now, after being in for 8 years at this point, that I'm finally in an organization where I don't necessarily have to out myself, or that being transgender isn't the main focus of who I am or my career. And a big thing that I try to remind people, especially being transgender in the medical field, is that being trans has no way, shape, or form of impacting how I perform my job as a behavioral health technician, or as a non-commissioned officer, as a leader, and as a speaker for the troops. So that's a lot of how my journey has gone with that.
Alexandria, did the wall start coming down with your transition, or did it take a while to develop what your style was like and how it changed after coming out?
So, yeah, there definitely was a period of adjustment there. I came out to my chain of command at the end of 2016. I had been deployed at the time that Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter announced a new policy. I was like, well, now is probably not the most appropriate time to start my transition. Let me wait until I get back to my duty station. So fast forward, we're looking at November of 2016. I come out to my chain of command. And what was surprising was that it was so boring. Like, I came out and they were like, oh, we're very supportive. Like, anything that you need, just let us know. And I was like, that was it? I was afraid this entire time that, you know, I was going to face discrimination, that I was going to be harassed. Nothing happened. You know, the life continued on. I continued working on a day-to-day basis. It was great. And then I started to look at my next steps. I'm like, well, where do I go next? You know, I'll continue with my medical transition, but now I have this weight off of my shoulders. Where do I go with my Air Force career, with my leadership personality? You know, how do I develop and grow? And it took me probably about a year where I was looking at myself and I was like, these walls that I've built to separate myself from everybody else, to keep a vital part of myself hidden, I don't have to do that anymore. And, you know, it took that year of close introspection to be like, well, all right, so now I can start to connect to people. I can start to be vulnerable. I can start to share my story. And there may not be other trans people like me in my unit, but I can share those experiences of, you know, hey, now that, you know, I've got my gender identity, my gender expression as female, now I can start to connect to my female troops. I can share the experiences that I had whenever I was presenting male. I can start building a bridge to those people around me. And I started to grow as a leader, as a mentor. And it was so freeing being able to build those connections. And I've only continued to grow since then. As you mentioned before, I was the assistant first sergeant and then acting first sergeant for one of my previous units. And I could not have done that if I hadn't grown as a leader after coming out. I would never have been able to accomplish that. And it's tearing down those walls and being able to build those bridges of connection to my airmen that has allowed me to grow as a leader.
Alexandria, your example illustrates some of the deliberateness and intentionality that perhaps is a component of the way in which LGBTQ individuals and trans individuals in particular may develop as leaders that is distinct from the leader development of others. And we talk a lot about what is that journey? How is that different? What is it that you think is particularly different about the way that you're able to develop as leaders that, that augments that journey and your ability to lead more effectively?
So for me, a lot of it comes down to struggles and obstacles that some of my peers may not have to deal with. You know, I have to worry about walking into a bathroom and being outed, you know, somebody sitting there and be like, well, wait a second, are you in the right bathroom? I don't deal with it as much anymore, but that was a constant worry when I was going through my transition. Going into a locker room, changing my clothes to do physical training. Am I going to get outed? Is somebody going to be like, wait a second, are you in the right place? And carrying that was so difficult. But I've grown because of those experiences, because of those challenges, those additional things that I had to go through as a leader has made me a much stronger mentor. And I've grown from those experiences. You know, just being able to say that, hey, I've had these challenges and I've experienced them and I've grown from them. And, you know, I've found ways of having difficult conversations with people, conversations where I've been very uncomfortable, and I'm sure they were very uncomfortable as well. Dealing with things like urinalysis, that's mandatory in the military and very uncomfortable for a trans person. Well, definitely uncomfortable for me. There may be some people that are like, whatever, it's fine. But going through and being proactive and being like, say, hey, I know this is what my gender marker is on that list, but let's have this conversation. Let's have this dialogue. And, you know, I'm a trans person. I may have, you know, these particular genitals, but I still have a mission to accomplish. I still need to get this done. Being proactive for that communication, that's something that I've built as an LGBTQ plus leader.
Thanks for that. Zane, how about you? What have you found distinctive about the leader development journey?
It's funny that your analysis was mentioned. So I actually volunteered in my last unit and in my current unit to be the person that administers the drug test. So I'm the person who works the desk and everything and processing people. And there was a major change in the regulation the last couple of years where usually females would get offered a wide mouth cup. And now it's supposed to be offered to everybody. And I know most unit prevention leaders, that's a title, they don't offer it. But I make it a point to offer it to every single person. And I get that moment of confusion of like, why are you offering this to me? I'm a guy, I don't need this. And I'm like, you know what? You're right, but I don't know what you have. I don't know what's going on with you, but I think it's important that everybody gets the opportunity and the tools that they need to succeed. And because of this, it's helped supplement me to be this liaison in my unit for transgender service members and the transgender patients that come over to my hospital, and that I've been fortunate to continue to grow as a leader and be this person that not only company level leaders, but battalion and brigade level leadership, not just in my organization, but even outside organizations reach to me and asking for guidance and input on how they can best support their service members.
So interesting how something as specific as your analysis can give us that example that is relevant across all aspects of what leaders should be doing, making sure people have the tools they need to succeed. Sabrina, what are your thoughts on this?
I think my development as a transgender military leader has been colored by the fact that I was socialized male growing up. So there's a common theme for women in the military is having a seat at the table. And I've never felt like I needed to deal with that. So I just walk up to the table and sit down because that's how I was raised. So I found that in the units I work in, that I can be an example of a woman who steps in and is not afraid to sit down at the table and make a place for myself. In doing that, it gives other people inspiration. Like other women in the military and civilians that I work with have commented that I don't seem afraid to speak up or involve myself where otherwise they may be. And I think that's a great, unique thing about being transgender. And it's not something I expected because being socialized male growing up was horrible in all aspects growing up. Like I didn't want any of that. But here I am now looking back on those events and using them here in the future, now where I never would have seen any of those things being useful.
What I think is really cool about what you all described is it connects so tightly with something we usually ask all of our guests, because we want to ask about what's your leadership superpower. Because we think these journeys and the barriers that LGBTQ leaders face have them develop these superpowers in unique ways. But as I listened to Zane talk about, you know, giving everyone the tools they need to succeed, that's a superpower. When I listen to Alexandria talk about communicating in new and interesting ways, that's a superpower. When I listen to Sabrina talk about taking a perspective she might not have had or found in any other way and utilizing it to advance the needs of herself, the team, the mission, that's a superpower. So I do want to give you the chance to say, if that's not your superpower, what is? Is there something else? Anyone?
That hits a nail on the head for me. Like, I'm brash and I can speak up too often. And I'm the, you know, example of women doing bad things or whatever, perceived as bad, right? And so I think that's an excellent takeaway, Bree.
Yeah, and Sabrina, I've tried to do that as well. You know, sitting at the table, taking my seat, and then I've had people view me as being, you're kind of intimidating. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing. But then I get that seat at the table and I can also use it to uplift others, which I think has come, it's an opportunity that's come because of my transition. I'm much more outspoken than I used to be. And now, you know, with my DEIA council here locally, I can provide educational opportunities, but then uplift others so that they have an opportunity to speak, because I'm going to take that seat at the table. That seat is mine. But then I can pull somebody else in and be like, hey, I've got this seat. You take it. You have your voice and you provide your perspective and your side of the story. And I love being able to uplift others and give them that seat.
I was going to say, I definitely connect with you with that and utilizing your perspective as that that positive weapon to be that outstanding leader. I've learned that especially I'm perceived as male, I appear as male, and being in the medical field, I have a lot of female troops, and I understand that intimidation that I don't want to give off. I don't want to come across that way. I want to make sure I'm as approachable as possible. And utilizing my experiences and my perspective of living as female for 20 plus years and then working through my transition has helped me become a better leader as well. That's something I wanted to share.
Thanks, Zane. I really like that terminology, the positive weapon, really powerful. Sabrina, you told such a great story earlier about having an experience where a leader was truly supportive and wonderful, perhaps even surprisingly so in that moment. And we're really interested in what is it that you've seen leaders do that enable and empower the LGBTQ plus people around them to thrive?
I think that the best leaders that I've encountered, when they have an LGBT person working for them or a transgender person, whatever, they don't do anything special. They treat them as normal people. Like, I don't need anything different than anybody else. If you know about me being transgender, then that's fine. And that's okay. That's part of who I am. I shouldn't be treated any differently than that. And so the best leaders that I've had and the ones that have let me bring every part of me to the table are the ones that knew I was transgender, and it was the least important thing to them about me.
Thanks for that, Alexandria.
To a certain degree, I absolutely agree with Sabrina's perspective. You know, it's nice to be treated as just another airman, just same as the person next to me wearing the same uniform. At the same time, I also appreciate leaders that are aware of what's going on with the community, because you look across the United States right now, and there's a lot of legislative attacks on transgender healthcare, on access to bathrooms, to participation in sports. And for those that have dependents in the LGBTQ plus community that may be affected by these policies, I appreciate those leaders that are aware of what's going on, even if it doesn't directly affect them. So I've had a couple of leaders reach out and be like, hey, how are you doing? How are the people that you're supporting and advocating for doing? What can I do as a leader to help you? So I think that awareness of what's going on, I've seen that increase since the incidents with George Floyd, you know, having those difficult conversations and knowing, hey, as a leader, they may be a white cisgender male, but they can still know what's going on and still be supportive to minority groups. And I think that really says a lot about the strength of somebody's leadership.
Absolutely. Yeah. Zane, what have you seen?
I feel like Sabrina really hit it on the head, hit the nail on the head with that. I remember, and one of my previous chain of commands telling them about me being transgender, the detachment sergeant said, I don't care. I'm going to treat you like every other soldier, and I'm going to hold you to the standard. And I always made sure to either meet that standard or exceed that standard. But one additional thing I do love to see, and sometimes I'm surprised when I see it, is when a senior leader especially will pull me aside and ask for my perspective in certain situations in order for them to understand the why behind it. Why is this happening? Why is there such pushback? What is your understanding of the situation? So that way, once again, they can continue to take on that perspective and use that as a tool for themselves or for their subordinates later.
So I want to dive into that question of why a little bit, and more specifically, contrast why you served in the first place to why are you still serving today? And is there something about your journey between maybe those two answers that is connected to leadership and your authenticity? Alexandria, why don't we start with you?
So my answer is actually kind of boring. I joined to support my family, and that's why I'm continuing to serve in uniform. I'm at 18 plus years right now. I am very close to the finish line. I've got retirement just around the corner. And that has always been one of my primary goals, is to, you know, continue to move up the ranks, to look at that increase in pay, to set myself up for life after the military, and to support my family, my wife and my four kids. They mean the world to me. But then I also have that secondary reason for serving that came out after my transition. There's an entire community out there that needs people to stand up and be loud, to make some noise, and to help support them. Because you look at rooms where decision making and policy making is happening, and it's a lot of cisgender white folk, and nothing wrong with them. They have done fairly well across the years, but sometimes it's nice to have different perspectives in that room, to have a female perspective, to have a trans perspective, to have an African-American perspective, an Asian-American perspective. You know, it's not just about having diversity, but it's having inclusion. It's about having those different voices chiming in and being, hey, wait a second, have you thought about it from this direction? And broadening our policy so that they're more inclusive for everybody. It's my firm belief that inclusion is one of the reasons why we have a decisive edge against our adversaries. And I would love to see that continue on into the future.
Zane, I know you mentioned earlier you've got a third generation history in the Army. Has your reason changed over the years of why you serve?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll be honest. Like I said, I joined at 18 because I needed some direction. I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. No idea, college or just in general, anything. So that was the original reason why I joined. And I continue to serve because I still see this hunger, this need that I have to make a positive impact in our military. I didn't recognize it before when I first started, in my first couple years of my contract. But when I started transitioning, when I found Sparta and became a part of this even greater community that I didn't even realize I needed, it goes to show that if you don't find your purpose will find you. And I never expected myself to be doing anything like this 10 years ago when I first came in. And I have to say, I'm at a very interesting point in my career now. Alexander, you said you're close to the finish line. I'm halfway there. And not to say that I don't want to continue serving, but trying to find those ways that I can continue to best serve my community. And that might be outside of the military, that might still be in the military. So I'm at this very interesting crossroad right now. So more to come on that in the future.
Sabrina, you're on the fast track doing some pretty amazing jobs. Maybe you will be that first trans chief within the Space Force. Has your reason changed? Have things grown for you in ways you didn't expect from why you joined in the first place?
Very much so. Like, similar to Zane, I had no direction in life. I had no real motivation to do anything. I didn't know where I wanted to take my life. I didn't join when I was 18. I joined when I was 22. So I spent 4 years after high school trying to figure it out and trying to find things that fit, and none of them fit. Finally, when I joined the military, I found that direction and I found that discipline and I started to flourish. It was amazing how much I changed. And then as I transitioned, I began to flourish even more. Like, I was afraid when I transitioned that I was going to lose something special about myself, that innate spark that was letting me succeed. I was afraid I was going to lose that. But as I went further on, that wasn't the case. And now I kind of agree with Alexandria. Here I am. I want to be that person in the room, that master sergeant, that senior master sergeant, and perhaps even that chief master sergeant that was transgender or that is LGBT. You know, my wife is non-binary. So I want to be that person that can be an inspiration to others who look up. And not only that, but I believe in what the Space Force does. And I didn't think I would ever be that patriotic person who was like, I'm here for patriotism. But I really am. Like, I believe in America, and I believe that we are doing great things and that we're on the right path. I think our path is more curvy than I would perhaps like, but I think the path is going forward. And so I believe in America, as patriotic as that may sound and corny, maybe to some, but I don't think it's corny. I think it's special.
Sabrina's example touches on something interesting as it relates to the topic of transition and different kinds of transitions that you might experience in your life. For example, civilian to military, married to unmarried, vice versa, non-parent to parent. Given that, what have each of you found in terms of your experience of transition that may be relevant for other leaders? What could all leaders learn from the experience of transition?
You learn to find strength when you're at your lowest. That's a big thing that I have gained from my transition, and that resiliency is so important. I know we preach it a lot in the United States Army. We have master resiliency training. And it's just making sure that you truly do find that strength, not only in yourself, but making sure that you find it in your troops and learning how to use that strength and those unique characteristics that each of us have, and making sure that we're utilized to the best of our abilities in order to continue to move forward and succeed. That's what I think of.
Excellent. Thank you. Alexandria.
So my advice to leaders is that, as you mentioned, everybody transitions in some way throughout their life, whether it's transitioning from civilian life into the military, and then from the military to civilian life. My transition from a non-parent to a parent, that was an incredible transition. I matured so much when all of a sudden I have a little life that is dependent upon me. And having that responsibility changed me so much. That transition from junior enlisted to NCO, the further transition from NCO to senior NCO, you look at all these things, everybody transitions. And in their own way, everybody is kind of trans. And my transition from, you know, being assigned male at birth to female, that's a transition that maybe not everybody will go through, but it's still a transition. And in its own way, it's not really different than any other transition. You know, I've grown as a person, I've matured, but I did the same thing when I got married, whenever I had children, whenever I put the uniform on. I've had a lot of transitions, and I don't want anybody to treat this particular one differently.
Yeah. Many, many meaningful transitions. Sabrina, what can leaders learn from this?
You know, a transition is really remaking yourself, right? Remaking yourself into something different, better in some ways. And so I think that with my transition and sharing that with others and seeing people in our community, that it's never too late to remake yourself. And that's what I saw my transition as, a chance to remake myself. And so when I have NCOs that work with me in the subordinates or whoever, they're like, oh, I'm just this. I could never do that. And I'm like, no, you're not. Anybody can remake themselves into what they want to be. I mean, this is a very drastic example. Like, I remade myself into a woman, right? But it can be something simple. Like, if somebody grew up in a small town and maybe in an impoverished area, like, you can remake yourself into the leader that you want to be. There's nothing stopping you except yourself. And that's the biggest holdup when it comes to transitions, is that we stop ourselves more than anybody else stops us. And that was very apparent with my own transition, because I was, the things I was scared of didn't exist. And that's what I try to share with other people too. Like, the bits that you're afraid of when it comes to a transition, when it comes to remaking yourself, they're probably imagined. And if you stare them down and face them, then it'll all come together.
Transition is change, and change is scary. And the definition of facing up to that, even when afraid, is courage. So it's certainly something for anyone to take hold of when they go through a transition in life, whatever that is. But Zane, you mentioned a key bit that leads into my next question, and that's about resilience. For me, it is hard to imagine a group of more resilient individuals than transgender service members who have been through what all of you have been through over the past 7 years. And the fact that you still serve at the whim of an executive who could change that with the stroke of a pen has to be scary. And to have the resilience and the fortitude to keep serving, I think is very impressive about what all of you do, even knowing there's an uncertain future out there. So to ask each of you about this and your resiliency, what is it that you do to recharge yourself when you might feel those doubts about service, or you've had to face these difficult times? what brings you back to full, to ready to go, to ready to lead in your capacity? Sabrina, we'll start with you on this one.
Two important things for me that help me recharge. The first one is just being out in nature, finding somewhere I can go hike and it's just quiet and I can just be with myself and there's no car sounds, there's no plane sounds or anything. And that helps a lot. The second thing that's most important to me is my friends and my companions, like being able to sit down with a friend and talk to them. I mean, they don't have to be transgender, but some of my friends are transgender. And when I talk to them about the experiences that I have and they empathize with me, that recharges me and reminds me that I'm not in this fight alone.
Alexandria, what gives you the fortitude to face another day?
So I may have a minor addiction to Lego sets. And for me, it's symbolic. I open up a box and these bags and a set of instructions fall out and it's a mess. And all these separate pieces, different colors, different shapes and sizes. And it's very difficult to see what is going to come out of it at the end. Yeah, I've got the picture on the box, but when you look at that, all those different pieces sitting out on the table, it can be a little overwhelming. You're like, well, I have to put all these together. And then I open up that instruction set, page one, and I start building the minifigures and slowly piece by piece, it comes together and it's cathartic. You know, I get into this mindset of, okay, one piece at a time, putting it together and slowly that Lego set starts to take form. And then it gets to the point where I'm like, you know what? I can see the end point. I can see what this is going to be. And then I reach that last page. I'm done with it. And I'm sitting there in my hands with this completed Lego set. I'm like, I did this. I started from all these separate pieces. I have this finished set. It looks amazing. I'm going to put it up on my shelf and it's going to be nice and pretty. And seeing that journey, seeing that bit of accomplishment, that recharges me. That brings me back and like, it gives me hope that, okay, my situation in life is going to be difficult. I see all these separate pieces. I don't know how it's going to come together, but now I've got hope that everything will fit together. And then I will have that completed Lego set at the end.
Zane, what's the cup of coffee to your soul?
I have to pause and say, I have never heard somebody explain in such a beautiful way why they love Legos, because I also enjoy Legos as well. I just got into getting Lego sets. So I just have to say bravo on that. But for me, there are two ways that I recharge myself. One is absolutely leaning on my support system, my friends. And I do that in an artistic way. And at the moment, it's singing a lot of karaoke. I love to sing and perform. And before that, it was performance in theater, and before that it was drag at one point, but absolutely getting on stage and just singing my heart out and feeling like a rock star absolutely recharges me, number one. And number two, when I have those doubts about, especially if my service in the military means something, if it's even worth it to get up and keep putting on my boots and keep moving forward, I talked to my dad a lot, because he had 24 years in service and has a lot of wisdom that he does his best to offer me. And he tells me all the time that to not listen to those people that refuse to change, because our military is an ever changing military. And if you can't conform to the change, if you can't adapt to the ever-changing battlefield, it's time for you to get out. And that I'm a part of that positive change that we continue to have and to continue moving forward. So that is what I do to recharge.
And what a powerful message to all leaders about the necessary adaptation that we all must continue forward. We'd like to close with one question, and Zane, you might have to answer this in the form of a song, so I'll go to Sabrina and Alexandria first. What was it that made you want to contribute to this project? And what is it that you're hoping to see out of it? Sabrina?
Reflecting on what Zane said about, was my service worth it? Or is my service worth it? And I think that the answer to that to me is, if I can help one person feel better about themselves, then it's worth it. And so I contribute to these podcasts and wanted to be a part of this because I know people will listen to this. And I know out there, there may be some young woman who hasn't realized how beautiful she is. And perhaps she can hear my words and feel better about herself. I just hope I can help somebody to not have to deal with all the struggles that I dealt with, to know that you're not alone, that you can do this, that you're strong enough. That's what it means to me to contribute to any of these kind of things, is to be there for somebody.
Thank you so much for that. Alexandria.
Sabrina, if we were in the same room together, I'd be high-fiving, giving you a hug, because absolutely, that is powerful, you know, being that voice for somebody, being that inspiration. And that's very similar to why I do things like this. Done a number of keynote speeches, done a lot of advocacy work. The book sitting behind Bree there, With Honor and Integrity, you know, provided a contribution to that book as well. I'm out there, I'm public, because I want to be the leader that I needed whenever I was younger. I want to be that example that I wish I could have lived up to whenever I was younger. I felt so alone. I felt isolated. You know, I looked around and I didn't see anybody like me. And so it's uncomfortable. I'm very introverted. I love having my private time and, you know, just stepping back behind a curtain and, you know, I don't like being visible, but then I see how valuable that is. I've had airmen come up and say, "Hey, I read your article in the New York Times and that was so inspirational." And seeing that I have helped change someone's life, even if just one person, as Sabrina mentioned, even if I do that for one person, it was worth it. So I'll continue to do things like this. I'll continue to make noise and be that good trouble. And, you know, I'm hoping to change two lives. We'll see what happens.
I think we'll all keep up that good trouble. Zane.
I couldn't come up with a song right off the top of my head, but something I think back to quite literally yesterday. I'm here in San Antonio, Texas, and walking around Six Flags, and there's a bunch of high school and middle school kids. And I saw these younger kids, I'd assume probably 14, 15 years old, these two boys who had their arms around each other and that cute PDA and just being out and open and authentically living out and proud. And it warmed my heart so much because I could not have imagined doing that at that age. I'd never in a million years I would have been able to do that. And I do this because I want this journey to be easier and easier and easier for the future generations, to the point that this isn't even a conversation anymore, that we don't even have to have these books, that we don't need to have these podcasts, that if a kid, a friend, a family member comes out to someone and says, "Hey, I'm a lesbian, I'm gay, I'm bi, I'm transgender, I'm questioning my identity and sexuality," that it's just another thing. That is what I want, and I want to be a part of that process and continue to move it forward just to make it so much easier for the rest of us. I hope no one has to go through what I went through in my early stages of my transition. I hope no one has to go through what any of us had to go through, our trials and tribulations. So that's why I do this.
Well, Alexandria, Sabrina, Zane, it has been a pleasure having you on Forged in Fire, and you truly do embody that spirit that we believe is so important and so enmeshed in LGBTQ leaders about wanting to make it better for those that follow, about being that trailblazer that marks the way and makes it easier for others to get to where you've been and then to go further. So thank you for sharing a bit of your stories with us. We're so glad you joined us.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Forged in Fire is hosted by Bree Fram and Liz Cavallaro, produced and engineered by Frida Castellanos and Christina George. Guest management by Trey Worth and original music by Bridget Benemark. The views and ideas expressed by the hosts and guests of this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the organizations or institutions they represent. To learn more about Forged in Fire, please visit us at forgedinfire.org.